The tradition of Festivus begins with the airing of grievances. I got a lot of problems with you people. Now, you're going to hear about it.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Airing of Grievances. I'm your host, Jay. I'm here with my co-host, Micah.
Hey.
All right, guys, we're back. This episode is entitled The Diplomats Club. So in this episode, Jerry is planning to meet up with a supermodel named Bridget at an airport lounge called The Diplomats Club. Because he is making a quick round trip gig to Ithaca, New York. Elaine, meanwhile, is planning to tell Mr. Pitt that she is quitting. George is trying to get back into his boss's good graces because he's already on thin ice, and then he mistakenly does something. Now his boss thinks he might be a racist, and later on Kramer comes in into the sort of the diplomat club's A block story. What did you think of this episode?
This is an okay episode. This is a journeyman episode. You know, it is, there are a few standouts, but once again, Jason Alexander steals this entire show.
Yeah.
He steals this episode. And look, I don't know if it's just because I'm black and, you know, the whole race thing in here is just hilarious to me to hear white people talk about, you know, race.
Trying to get a black friend.
Right. And trying to prove that they're not racist. And this isn't the only time that they touch on race in this show.
No.
I just find it just hysterical. You know, everything else is fine, right? But the George story, that's what does it in this episode for me.
Okay. So, yeah, I like this episode. I like the George story. It is definitely the better of the stories. I do like Elaine's story where they are suspecting that she's trying to kill Mr. Pitt for his money, which is pretty funny. Just because they give that one woman like all these like exasperated looks in the background, like, she's trying to kill him. Like that, those are kind of funny to me. But yeah, I think the episode's okay. I definitely did chuckle a lot. But it's certainly not the best, one of the better ones of the season. So the episode starts out with Elaine comes over to Jerry's apartment. She discloses that she's getting ready to go tell Mr. Pitt that she's quitting. Both Jerry and George are there, and they're like, all right, it's going to be awesome. He's like, you know, it's great. She's like, I'm marching in and, you know, marching in and quitting. And they're like, yeah, it feels good. And George's like, yeah, I've definitely done the march in to quit. And Jerry's like, well, how's the march out? He was like, not so great.
Yeah.
Yeah, getting marched out is not not cool. You ever quit a job like that?
Not quit a job like that and then not have nothing lined up.
That's fiction.
That's foolish white people stuff.
Yeah, no, I'm not quitting a job and not having another.
No, but I usually leave on good terms because, you know, you never know.
You ever been fired?
Yeah, I got fired from the United States Postal, United States Patent and Trademark Office. I got fired from them.
Yeah. Didn't you also get fired from Target for being violent?
No, not for being violent, for stealing.
I thought that was from Kmart.
Oh, yeah, that was from Kmart. Yeah, that was Kmart.
Oh, you've been fired from numerous times.
Yeah, I got fired from Kmart for stealing. You know about that.
I don't know about
that. And I got fired.
According to my knowledge of the statute of limitations, I do not know.
And I got fired from Target for carrying a knife, which I was working security at Target. Hello. Like,
I had to stab somebody.
I can't carry a gun. So what's the next best thing? A knife.
Makes sense.
I'm sure if I had a bow and arrow, it'd be all good, right?
They actually have a sign at the front door of my government building that I work at every day that says no archery equipment. Why that specifically? Yeah, I will
you know
never
what?
Know.
You know why? Because you work with a lot of white people.
I do. But there, I feel like there's more Indians and Chinese folks. Like, that's not really their thing.
No, that's not really any normal person's thing. Yeah. In this day and age.
I think they saw We Need to Talk About Kevin, and they were like, no archery equipment. So, yeah, I have been fired from a job once. And that was fine because I worked at a some IT place when I was in California. And I got fired from there. I was there for like a week. And they called me at home on like a Saturday. They were like, don't worry about coming in on Monday, boss. And I was like, that's cool. Because I was about to quit this job. This job sucked.
I mean, at least that's good. I got fired from the USPTO after a work day.
No, I'd have been mad.
Yeah, they man. Don't call like, me I in. I was fucking pissed, man. Yeah. Like,
but you guys had like a commission kind of thing, right? Like you had to get so many things done.
It's the worst job I've ever had in my entire life.
Yeah, you hated it.
It's the worst job I've ever had.
I've never seen you more miserable, even after breaking up with your fiance. I've never seen you more miserable.
I fucking hate that job, man. You can make so much money doing that job, but you have to relegate yourself to being a cog in a machine, and you have to be incredibly efficient, because if you don't, like, you have quotas every 2 weeks, and then once that 2 weeks is up, you are expected to have beaten the quota, and then the quota goes up.
Like, that's impossible.
Right. Like, that's how many patents come in.
No.
Nah, yo, fuck that job. Yeah. Fuck that job.
Yeah, I remember you hated every moment of that job.
I'm home yelling at my then fiance. I'm like, what the, like, she's like, you need to calm down. Working 16-hour days and shit. Yeah. Nah, yo.
No.
Nah.
Never that.
Nah. Fuck you, USPTO. Yeah.
It's your Luke Russert. I get it. very upset for no apparent reason. So Elaine goes to Mr. Pitt, and she's about to quit. But when she comes in, he's sitting at his desk, and he's like, "Look, I've decided to add you as a beneficiary on my will when I die, because I really want to take care of you, because I think you're like family." So of course, like the cuck she is, she decides not to quit. Which that would have been my move too. I'd be like, we good.
Yeah.
Just waiting for you to die, old man. Like, give me that money.
I'm in a will. Or my cousin's, I'm a beneficiary in my cousin's life insurance. You see, my cousin she's a wonderful woman, but she has two sons, one of whom is Preston Street. and the other is estranged and now living in San Francisco.
Oh, you getting that money?
Well, on the condition that it's my job to make sure that they get the money, that each of them get their share and use it properly, and then I get a piece of that.
Any particular reason they're living in San Francisco?
To get away from Baltimore.
Yeah. That's a good reason. I mean, yeah, I get that.
Look. San Francisco's really nice. It really is. I would be right there with you if I could afford it.
But until you get the money from the being a beneficiary, right. You really can't. Right?
Exactly.
You have to wait. That's really hilarious.
It's weird. It's a weird feeling.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'm a beneficiary on my mom's life insurance, like partial beneficiary on that.
Yeah, and it's just...
It's weird.
Yeah, it feels kind of odd, you know.
It feels odd every time you're standing behind them in, like... Like at the top of a staircase, and you're just like,
just sitting there waiting for the bus, and it's just like, push, like, oh,
look over there.
But like, it's weird, right? Because you get a windfall for someone dying. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a little weird. Like that is a little weird. Like my wife and I, when we bought our first house, the down payment for the house came from her grandmother, like giving her an inheritance when she passed.
Yeah.
So like we have a painting and it will be in every house that we own from now until the day we die.
Yeah,
like,
better.
Thanks grandma. Like,
you otherwise know. Grandma's going to haunt your ass.
Well, I don't really believe in ghosts. So, But at the same time, I believe in respect and not taking chances. So yeah, like, yeah, inheritance is a little weird. It's super weird. So she doesn't quit the job for obvious reasons. Meanwhile, George is back at the Yankees, and he borrows Jerry's Polaroid camera so that he can take a picture of him and his boss, so he has a picture of him and his boss that he can put on his desk to try to like warm up to his boss's good side, right? And it's a hilarious scene because they're all taking pictures all in the office. It's like, oh, we only got one shot left. And George is like, how about me and Mr. Morgan? Like, what? Okay.
Right.
He was like, why? I don't want to take a picture of you. I can't stand your ass. And while he's standing next to his boss, he goes, anyone ever tell you you look like Sugar Ray Leonard? And he's like, what? Like, no one has ever told me that. And then, of course, the woman takes a picture right as like George is looking bewildered. And now Mr. Morgan, his boss, thinks that he's a racist.
Yeah, because Mr. Morgan says, I suppose we all look alike to you, don't we, Costanza?
Yeah, it's like... Now, here's the question, Terrence. Does this black gentleman in this image look like Sugar Ray Leonard? You are, of course, aware that who Sugar Ray Leonard
yes,
is.
Yes, I do know what... Yeah,
exactly. He does. Like, but that's the joke. It's like, yeah, no, but you really do look like him, dude. Like, also, he has gigantic eyebrows.
Yeah, he got Ed Boon eyebrows. Yeah. Like, that shit is ridiculous.
It's like two Saddam Hussein mustaches.
But you know, like the writing here is hilarious, right? Because you know, sometimes you walk through life not thinking that white people don't understand like stuff like this. Yeah. And they completely understand it, and they're playing off of like white fear of race, of being referred to as a racist, and yeah. Like that's why I like this.
They're very cognizant.
Yeah, they're very cognizant of it. Like they know, they get the joke, and they understand that it is a joke, and it is like nowadays I don't think people would be as subtle, or I don't think subtle is the word I'm looking for, but they wouldn't be. They wouldn't have. It wouldn't be played for laughs the way it is like this.
Yeah, yeah, that's fair. They wouldn't be so lighthearted about it.
Yeah, they wouldn't be so lighthearted. Yeah, yeah. It would be like a fucking...
A lesson, a teachable moment.
Kind of yeah, thing. Yeah.
So I think probably the other part of this is that the benefit here is that Jews are also... They don't see themselves as necessarily white. They see themselves as a minority. So they have, because they're also discriminated against to a fucking psycho degree around the world, which is fucking bonkers. Yeah. I think they also are a little bit more cognizant of it than your run of the mill white person too. So I think that helps. And I think that's why the show does a really good job of being able to kind of weave that better than most. Especially at this time. And so, so George is talking to Jerry at Monk's, and he's like, yo, Mr. Morgan thinks I have a racial bias. I don't have a racial bias. He's like, I would have marched on Selma if it was on Long Island. And so he says like, he doesn't think I have any black friends. And he was like, but you don't have any black friends. He was like, and outside of us, you don't really have any white friends either. It's like, that's a good point. Yeah. So that sort of goes on for a little bit. Then Kramer meets Jerry at Monk's because he's going to take him to the airport, but they got to stop by the drugstore first. So George is like, I got to get some black friends to prove to Mr. Morgan that, you know, I'm down. And so he goes, and this is a good callback. He goes to see
Joe Temple,
the black guy that he watch Breakfast at Tiffany's with him and his daughter to an annoying level. You can tell this show is old because George is holding a United Artists bucket of popcorn. Yeah, that is mad old. That company is dead and gone.
So here's my hypothetical, right?
Oh boy.
George, and this is a running joke throughout the episode. George is going back to all the black people that have guest spotted on the show, no matter how tertiary a character they are, no matter how innocuous they are. He met them at one point, and now he's trying to gather those black people up, the only ones that he knows, the strangers in his life. He's trying to gather them up so that he can prove to one himself that, hey, I'm not racist. I got black friends. And to prove to Mr. Morgan, hey, I'm not racist. I got black friends, right? So here's my hypothetical. Let's pretend that we give a fuck about what white people think, right?
Sure.
Let's pretend.
This is a hypothetical.
Let's pretend that we don't want to come off racist to our superiors, right?
Superiors? What does that mean?
Your bosses.
Oh, okay.
No, like, nigga, not white people being our superior.
Terrence is like, I need to chime in on this.
No, our bosses, yeah, right? Sure. We have white bosses in this fictional world.
And in the real world.
No, my boss is Indian. Fuck that. Fuck that. I refuse.
Somebody's going to be
taking
person.
Orders from no white man. My boss is Indian, and his is Chinese. Fuck that. we diverse in Virginia. let's pretend we have white bosses and we want to you know, get in good with them. What white people would you bring to introduce to your bosses? And
how many do I get to bring?
You can look, you can bring anybody that we know on the show, or you can bring any white person that you know, even if we don't know them. But if we don't know them, you have to describe them to us.
Okay.
Okay. Now the second part, right? The first part.
You've really been thinking about this.
Oh yeah. Because this episode ain't that great. You gotta give people something. So the second part, right? What white people would you bring to your boss? Like, hey, I'm not racist. I got white friends, right? The second part, what white people would you want to make sure that you do not blame? Because your white friends are trifling.
All right. I'm gonna start with the latter first. Look, I love him to death, but I can't bring Jack.
Nah,
Jack Wilder, yo. Now Jack gonna go crazy. He gonna say some wild shit. I'll be like, yo, what the fuck? No, you can't bring Jack.
That would have been my answer.
Yeah, you can't bring Jack. You gotta bring Brad.
Right?
Brad is the closest to Tom Hanks that I know.
It's Tom Hanks, Mr. Rogers, Brad, yeah. White Jesus.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's the order. That's true. He is almost an insufferably nice person.
Yes. Now look, but here's the thing, right? Here's the thing. And Brad, if you're listening, please don't take any offense to what I'm about to say, because I love both of y'all, right? I love both of y'all. Y'all are the nicest people in the world to me, right? I love y'all. I would take Brad to see, look, here's a model example of a white person.
I already know where this
right?
is going.
I would not bring Brad's wife.
Nah.
Because no, Brad's wife will fight a nigga. Like she will, yo.
No.
She'll punch you right in your goddamn face.
Nah, Emily too real, dude. No, you can't bring Emily. Nope. You know the universal joke that you make across the shows, which is like the Brad in the picture, the Doc in the negative.
That
is Brad and Emily.
Too, boy.
Yeah, it is.
That's
it
them
is.
Too.
Like, I feel like Brad is like, Brad often has to be like, Emily, don't fuck that person up. Like, I feel like Brad's got to step in and be like, nah, calm down.
We used to work at GameStop. We used to work with a woman. She was our manager. She's a really nice woman. Really cool, right? But her name is Susie. I would not bring Susie around to white bosses to show them as their models, because Susie is cut from the exact same cloth as Brad's wife.
Yeah.
Nice,
but like, I come.
I will fucking fight you. And she was a manager at GameStop, yo.
No, you gotta learn the
service industry.
No,
she ain't taking that shit.
you can't put up with it.
Nah.
Let's see. Other people I would bring or not bring. I would bring Andy for intimidation because he's giant.
Yeah, Andy's like
he's a really nice guy.
He's like he's a really nice guy. I imagine that if the Undertaker wasn't the Undertaker, and he was just kind of like
just a guy,
just a guy, just mean Mark. I imagine that's Andy, right?
Yeah. The Undertaker of Winnemucca?
Yeah.
The Undermucker? No, that makes a lot of sense. You need him for like just muscle, right? Because he would seem physically intimidating, but he also has the voice of a 12-year-old girl. So like it's not a big deal. And I'm saying that as I'm throwing stones at a glass house.
Yeah, I don't know enough white people.
Brad, Jack, Andy.
Look.
Brad and Andy.
Look.
That's it.
Look, I love her to death. I respect her. I would bring Carrie around. No, hell no.
For the same reason you don't bring Emily. What the fuck?
I don't know what it is.
Double dragon. You'll bring the two of them. Fuck somebody up. You bring them if you got some fucking heat with somebody. Be like, yo, we need to fuck my boss up. He fired me. You'd be like, yo, Emily, Carrie, let's do this.
Because you say some wild shit. You'd be like, yo, why the fuck did you...
I mean,
Joe, they don't give a fuck.
It was like, I kind of needed that recommendation. Thanks. God damn.
So I was like, well, you know, I really didn't think. I thought Captain Marvel was a little bit of a Mary Sue. I'm like, Carrie, calm down. Relax. Relax. Why are you already on the top rope? Just rubbing your elbow, getting ready. Relax. No, you can't bring them. No, those are your thug backup.
Yeah, yeah. My wife has, my wife is from Florida. She has a ton of white friends. For the most part, I would bring them, except for one. And I think her name, what is her name? I don't know, but she's Italian as fuck. Like her last name is like Cugino or some shit like that. Like,
oh, she mobbed up.
She, yeah, bro. Like, she is mobbed the fuck up. And she's a very nice person. Nah, yo, she'll get somebody to shoot your ass. She'll put her head out on you.
Yes, you can't have that.
Can't have that. And her brother, he's another really nice guy, obsessed with Superman. Obsessed, right? Like, to the point where he became a bodybuilder and he kind of fashions himself to look like Clark Kent. It's wild.
Nah, you can't trust him.
Nah.
Nah, he's going to fight somebody.
Yeah,
like, nah.
Yeah, he'll fight somebody. Like, I'm surprised.
You know, I didn't really like Man of Steel. No, come here for a second.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Choke your ass up.
Really nice people. I ain't bringing them around my bosses or nothing like that.
I'm not bringing them around.
Fuck that. Bosses. Nah, fuck that.
Yeah. No, look, I get it. That was a good hypothetical. I like it. So George goes to see this guy, and just as he's like trying to convince that guy, like, I got another, you know, Audrey Hepburn movie or whatever. His daughter walks in, and she's like, oh my God, it's that man, Dad, that man is here. She's like, what are you doing here? Get away from me. And so that sort of scene ends. We switch over to back at the pharmacy. Jerry had to stop before we went to the airport. Kramer is there with him, and Kramer knocks over like a stand, and so Jerry is cleaning it up. And he puts a pin on the back of his ear, and he's dressed. He looks like somebody who works there, basically.
Yeah, he's dressed up because he's got that show he's immediately going to.
Right. So Mr. Pitt shows up, and he needs to get cold medicine, but he wants to check with a pharmacist to make sure it won't interfere with his heart medicine that he's taking, right? Mm-hmm. And Jerry just starts giving him advice when he asks him, not saying, hey, I don't actually work here. Yeah. And so the guy's like, oh, I need an appetite suppressant and cold medicine. So he gives him like an antihistamine and all that stuff, which is clearly not okay for someone taking heart medicine. Meanwhile, Kramer and Jerry, they get to the Diplomats Club. We meet Jerry's agent, who treats him like a fucking baby. And it's like, oh, you know, they have soft drinks on the plane. It's going to be okay. And he's just like, yeah, I know. I've flown before. Relax. Then we find out Mr. Pitt is like all laid up because he had taken all of these drugs. And he's just a mess. And this woman comes in who like looks after him, and she's like, where were you, Elaine? You know, and she was like, I was doing some light shopping. Sorry, yeah, I didn't make it.
My boss gave me the day off. Fuck you. Who are you?
Yeah. And so she suspects that this woman suspects that Elaine is maybe like out to get Mr. Pitt killed so she can get his money. Yeah. Kramer's just sitting at the Diplomats Club, relaxing, where he meets Rex Tillerson or some other. I mean, yeah, look. Yeah, that guy could have been the Secretary of State. Like, he done. And so he meets this sort of cowboy guy, and they start betting on flights. And Kramer is a recovering gambler. But they start betting on which flights are going to come in faster or slower or get delayed and things like that. I don't have a gambling problem.
I'm way too cheap to have a gambling problem.
Yeah, that feels accurate.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to like Vegas or anything?
Not Vegas. I've been to a number of casinos and have just been bored out of my mind.
It's because you don't drink.
Yeah. Like, I don't drink and I don't gamble. So
do you know the whole thing? You know the whole thing about casinos with drinking? As long as you're playing, the drinks are free.
Yeah, the drinks are free. Yeah.
Yo, that is an insanely smart idea.
Yeah, it is.
Free drinks and no clocks.
And no clocks, yeah. No clocks, no windows.
No doors. Like, you got to go. Once you get into a casino, oh, you're locked in.
Yeah. We went to, the last casino I went to was the MGM Grand. And
I haven't been to that one. Is it not nice?
No, it's not nice.
It's not, not nice by your standards, or is it not nice by casino standards? Because casino standards are basically, is there puke on the floor or not? Like, really?
Okay. It's not nice by my standards, and I don't go to a lot of casinos, but I think it's mainly the clientele.
Oh, it's probably real niggerish, though.
I would, Horseshoe is more niggerish than MGM, but that's just because
it's right downtown.
Right. It's a lot of niggas in Baltimore, right? Like
it's all niggas in Baltimore.
Right. We get it's we get all kinds. You know what I mean? Like sometimes on a good night, the clientele is not fancy, but it's not like.
Wait, you're talking about the MGM?
Nah, I'm talking about the MGM now.
Okay.
And the MGM is like, you could tell who's going to a show.
The day it opened?
Yeah.
No, I thought that was the Horseshoe.
That was Horseshoe also. It was a fight in a pizza line at the Horseshoe. I remember that.
At the pizza line?
Yeah.
And you could tell. High school?
When in the MGM, you could tell who's going there for a show and who's going there to gamble. Put it that way.
I will say this. I've been to Vegas once. I had a really good time. I've been to Atlantic City once. That was a really good time. It's gambling is weird because gambling at like 8 or 9 o'clock at night is very different. It's exactly what you would think it would be. Like, oh, okay, people having a good time, you know, like, oh, this is fun, whatever. And then, like, my wife and I, when we went to Vegas, we woke up, for some reason, in, like, the middle of the night. It was, like, 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning. Mm. And she was like, do you want to just go down to the casino, right? Because, like, the fucking city never sleeps. Like, there's just fucking lights and noise and shit the entire time. So I was like, all right, let's just go to, let's go downstairs. And we go to the casino that was connected to our hotel. Yo, Vegas at 3 or 4 in the morning is a very different fucking situation.
I imagine it's crazy. I imagine it's just sad.
It's sad, but it's that moment where you're seeing people like using their credit cards. Yeah, buddy. Like before, you get the chips, you're good, like this is all I got. Damn, I lost. Like that's 8 o'clock crowd. The 3 a.m. crowd is a motherfucker who's been playing since 8 o'clock to 3 or 4 in the morning. I saw a guy scream at one of the women working there. It was like, I will fucking kill you, you bitch. I was like, yo. Yeah. Because that nigga had lost his whole paycheck.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. That pit boss was like, time to go. Get him out of here. And, you know, they beat the brakes off him when they got me out of here. I don't talk to nobody like that in here. Yeah.
It sounds like fun.
No, it was interesting to watch. I was like, oh.
I'm going to go back to my room.
No. I was just like, with like binoculars, like, look at that guy's life fall apart. You can see it. You can see the moment where his heart breaks. You can see when his car didn't go through anymore. Can you imagine going home to your wife and be like, yeah, I just got paid, but I blew it all at the casino.
Yeah, I'm not trying to have that conversation. That would be disastrous.
Oh, shit.
No, that shit was amazing. He was like yelling. He was mad, just knocking shit over. I was like, yo.
Man, you do realize where you are, right?
Yo, they will kill you in Vegas. You will never get home.
Yo, you are literally in the middle of a desert.
Yeah, I've seen enough Martin Scorsese movies to know they will beat you with baseball bats and throw you in a ditch.
Yeah.
They did that shit to Joe Pesci. And he the hardest nigga alive. They beat him and his brother with aluminum baseball bats at the end of Casino. Like it was nothing. That scene was fucking horrifying. So Jerry makes it to Ithaca. He's getting ready to go on, and his agent, played by Kitty from That 70s Show.
Yeah.
She's great. She's like, don't freak out, but the pilot from the plane is in the audience. And he's like, oh, okay, whatever the fuck do I care? And so Jerry goes out there, and he completely fixates on the pilot, and he freaks out, and he has a terrible set. And he's like, why did you tell me that the fucking pilot was there? That was fucking stupid. Meanwhile, Kramer is in deep with Rex Tillerson for like $3,600. And so he calls Newman to help him out. And Newman brings, an old mail bag that was worth $3,600. That was the mail bag of the Son of Sam, who Newman took over his mail route. And the guy accepts it,
Weird.
Yeah, I would have not taken that.
Yeah, it's a bag, yo.
Yeah, yeah, I don't give a fuck if it's Son of Sam's bag. Who cares? Then Jerry, trying to make it back on the plane to Ithaca, he gets kicked off because the pilot says that he's making him uncomfortable and he can't fly.
Can you do that?
Yeah, a pilot can kick you off. Absolutely.
Like, for no reason whatsoever?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, no, that's that is definitely a thing. Meanwhile, George is still trying to get some black friends together.
He calls the exterminator.
He calls the exterminator, right. And they try to meet up with Mr. Morgan. Mr. Morgan's out to dinner.
By himself at a restaurant. You lonely son of a bitch.
Have you ever do that?
No. I ain't that lonely.
You've never ate at a restaurant? Like traveling or anything?
Not at a sit-down restaurant by myself.
That like, seems got a weird. Table. No, I'm not getting a table.
Right. If I do that, I'm at the bar.
Yeah, I will sit at the bar.
Yeah, I'm not going to get a table for one, please. Like, nah, yo, I ain't doing that.
Women find that very empowering.
Yeah, well,
I'm a man.
Yeah, they're crazy. Yeah. I'm a man. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah, society is working for us. We don't have to sit at a table.
Yeah.
I am empowered.
Being alone means you're empowered. All right.
Well, I think there is a whole
You wanna feel empowered with me? Pick up that check.
Nah, that's different.
Nah. I ain't trying to do that.
Yeah, pick it up.
I dare you.
Yeah, I dare you.
Because you ain't going to do it.
Look, that's why. Look. I'll pick it up and slide it over to your ass. Yeah, I do. No, but I've heard from a number of women that is empowering to be able to eat. Because, I mean, there's like societal like weirdness of like, oh, look at this lonely cat lady.
Right. Look at this broad, can't get a man.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Like my wife takes like she said that felt really good when she traveled alone for the first time to sit and eat dinner alone. And like, you just bring a book.
Yeah.
Something like that. I'm like, sounds sad.
Yeah. I mean,
sounds like you needed a man. It's ridiculous.
I mean, it's a little different when you're at like Panera. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah. Like
it's like a college lounge.
Right. Like I went when I was in New Orleans recently, I went into like just some random restaurant and I was just by myself. But like the smart person, I sat at the bar.
Yeah, yo.
And like, had a big bowl of pho. It was great.
Yeah, like I'm not trying to go to the Capitol Grill and sit at a table by myself.
That would be so fucking weird.
Yeah.
Oh, what would you like? A steak for one. Do you need a bottle of wine? No, it's just me. I mean, yes, I will take it. That's fine. So just fast forwarding, Kramer wins double or nothing bet with Rex Tillerson. And like, he's like being congratulated or whatever. And then Elaine comes in and she's like, oh my God, you hear about, Jerry. He had to get off his flight and it was the flight that they were betting on. And he was like, he had to get off the flight because he single-handedly ruined it because the pilot told him he had to leave. And so Rex Tillerson's like, so you had your friend do this so you could win the money, and he just takes his traveler's check back that he was going to pay him, and then he just leaves. He calls him a cheater, basically. That would be a really insane rigging of an election or rigging of a
goddamn. Like, yeah, that shit is so ingrained, like
ingrained in my fucking head.
Rigging elections is so commonplace now.
Yeah, well, and when I think Rex Tillerson, I think that fucking douchebag in charge. It's kind of crazy. So then Jerry's finally back at the airport to meet up with Bridget, the supermodel, and she comes in and he's looking like shit, but she's like, I've got 30 minutes before my flight leaves, and then they just start making out. Look, shout out to Jerry because she's pretty attractive. And he's making out in front of the window, and then the plane pulls up and it's the fucking pilot, and the pilot's just staring at him, and then like Jerry just like starts freaking out. And then that is the end of the episode. The sort of the stinger is George took the exterminators to the restaurant that Mr. Morgan was at having dinner. They're all sitting there. George is being obnoxious. And Mr. Morgan's like, all right, look, I got to go. He finds out that...
that the guy really is an exterminator.
Yeah, and the guy's like,
all right, Joe.
Yeah, he was like, yeah, I've been in this restaurant a number of times. You wouldn't imagine the amount of rat droppings I find. And George like literally spits his food out. And Mr. Morgan leaves. And the waiter comes to, like, George asks for the check. And the guy comes, and as Mr. Morgan is leaving, the guy was like, don't worry about it, man. Sugar Ray Leonard can eat here for free anytime. And George is like, see, I fucking told you. And Mr. Morgan has already left.
Like, and then, and like that's the payoff for that hour, half hour long joke, man. Like, that story was the thing that made this episode, man.
Yeah. But, like, that dude really does look like Sugar Ray Leonard.
Yeah, he does.
Like, I'm sorry, you do.
You do, Morgan. You do.
Like, it's kind of funny that they found that, like, yeah, he actually does look like this guy. Yeah. I wonder if they asked him, like, who do people say you look like?
Yeah.
Right? Because he does. He absolutely looks like Sugar Ray Leonard. He looks more like Sugar Ray Leonard than Usher does, who played him in a movie. Yeah.
Okay.
That's a true story. All right. That is it for us for this episode of The Airing of Grievances. We are back. We will be back on a regular basis. Now that Micah, who's the father. So we will see you guys next week.
See ya.
Bye.
Really?